Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
This is my opinion, and I'm going to seek my approval. Do I approve of me?
Love doesn't have any expectations. It doesn't seek something in return. It gives because it wants to.
At our core, all of us have these feelings of being unlovable and inadequate. And until we start to care for those parts of ourselves, we can't really have the outer successes that we long for.
Does money buy you intuition, insight, creativity, higher vision, transcendence? No. Money does buy you pleasure, and pleasure is good, but it's not enough. We need fulfillment.
Welcome to the Unwind Podcast, a show to help you pause, relax, reflect, and be curious. I'm your host, Poppy Jamie, a best-selling author and entrepreneur exploring the human experience. I interview world-leading thinkers, shaping ideas around the mind, health, spirituality, philosophy, and culture. I'm often reminded that thoughts become things, so we need to choose the good ones. I hope this show helps you to do that too. On today's podcast, we are addressing male fertility. There are many reasons for this topic. Firstly, because male fertility is deeply under-discussed, and I'm sure you would agree. I couldn't believe that the statistics show a third of all infertility is male factor orientated, another third is on the female side of things, and then the last third is usually unexplained. But the problem is, women tend to take on all the fertility responsibility. They're the first to change their diets, change their lifestyle, change their habits. But the data shows men are just as responsible for any infertility problems, but they're less likely to take action. My guest this week is leading urologist, Dr. Justin Dubin, who is a men's health specialist. He is the co-host of the Man Up podcast and a fantastic educator on the subject of male fertility and how you can optimize it. I love this subject so much. I've sent this podcast to so many of my friends because it's something I wish we were all taught at a much younger age, but it's better late than never. Justin provides actionable, practical, and really easy things to learn about so you can optimize your health, not just for this decade, but many decades to come. Just to give us an overview for us to really understand what on earth is happening, the data suggests sperm counts are falling dramatically. Is this true, or is this data being misinterpreted?
It's a great question. And first off, Poppy, thank you so much for having me on. I really appreciate you using your platform to educate people, men and women, about their health, their fertility. And as we're going to learn today, they're actually one and the same. But before we answer your question, I do want to give a few definitions so people understand what we're talking about when we're talking about infertility. So, you know, male infertility or couples infertility, could be female infertility, is this inability to have a child. And typically infertility is diagnosed at about 1 year of a couple trying to conceive and their inability to do so. And there is a factor involved. You know, a lot of people think about women. So sometimes we talk about a year in general, if your female partner is under the age of 35, about 6 months above 35. And then we always recommend that couples that have a female partner above the age of 40 to actually go seek evaluation sooner. And I think this is important because about one in seven, I think it's becoming one in six couples, that's like 15% of couples, struggle with fertility. One thing that is really not talked about enough is this aspect of male infertility. And believe it or not, it kind of makes sense when you really think about it. 50% of couples that struggle with infertility have a male factor involved. 50%, right? There's two people. In fact, about 30% of the time in couples infertility, it's strictly the male aspects issue, So, you know, this is something that we really need to stress because I think that guys don't want to talk about fertility, and we actually have that. You know, we know that about 18%, almost one in five men, are not evaluated for fertility when their partner is. And you know, when you hear the numbers, then you understand that if you are a couple going through fertility, it's really important that you as the man also get evaluated. And you know, there's this huge stigma around it. There was a great paper that came out of Northwestern where they showed that only about 30% of men who were concerned about their fertility were willing to discuss their concerns with a doctor. So we do know that this is an issue going forward with men and their concerns for fertility, and it's something that we need to address. So having said that, now let's talk about this infertility and the data suggesting that sperm is declining. Now, it's important to understand that sperm decline has a lot of implications behind it, right? There's implications for birth rates, male reproductive health, you know, there's general health, societal trends, and men's self-identity, as we kind of alluded to before. You know, men identify being able to have a child with masculinity, who they are, you know, they want to be a parent. So, you know, this is a very important topic and it's quite controversial. And, you know, there are studies, and you know, Dr. Swan had done these studies in 2017. I think she came out with a newer study more recently. She also wrote this book, The Countdown, which I've read. I think it's definitely worth your time if you're interested in this topic. And in that 2017 paper, there's a more updated one now, I think, but it's similarly stating that there was a 50 to 60% decline in sperm count between 1973 and 2011 among men in the Western populations. Now, since that time, there's obviously been this huge ongoing debate. Is it real? What's going on? Why is this happening? And I think some of the criticisms may be fair of the paper. Some of the criticisms include, well, you know, in 1973, our sperm analysis, our ability to in the labs was not as accurate. So the thought was, as we've gone through time, we now have less variability in semen analysis testing just because we have better technology in that space, which is one criticism. Another criticism is that the statistics for a lot of these studies were differently done. And if you change the way that you do the statistics, actually sperm count isn't declining. But I think the important thing here is to really be aware that, you know, there is this concern, and I'm not a doomsday guy. So, you know, is it possible that sperm count is declining? Yeah, it's definitely possible. Is it the end of the world? Like, what's going on? I'm not one of those people. I think that this is an important wake-up call, if anything, for men to discuss their fertility status, for couples to discuss, you know, their fertility and understand how your fertility can be impacted so that we can prevent this decline in the future and that you as a couple can have a family and the family that you desire.
What are the main factors affecting sperm health and decline in these numbers, even if it's not as dramatic as what some people think the decline is? There's still, as you said, there is still a decline. What is driving this?
There's a couple ways you can break it down. I think one of them is, you know, fertility is very interesting because you can do a couple of things. One is there's things that you're just born with that you can't really control. And then there's things that you are lifestyle factors that you definitely can have an impact on. And, you know, things you can't control, genetics, right? You can have cystic fibrosis, Klinefelters. There's these things called Y microdeletions. And some people just have very low sperm counts. We don't really know why. Genetics are very complicated. And, you know, sometimes we don't have all the genetic answers for screening of why people have low sperm counts. There's other things, anatomy, varicoceles, which are dilated veins around your testicle. About 15% of men have them. Most people live their whole lives without knowing they have them, but about 40% of guys who present for fertility have them. And there's things we can do, like surgery if you need it. Then there's blockage, right? Some people had a vasectomy. I know that sounds obvious, but some people have a vasectomy. Life happens. They want to have a kid again. Some people have things called retrograde ejaculation, seen a lot in diabetes patients where they're able to orgasm, but no semen comes out. There's other reasons for that, other kinds of surgeries that can cause blockage as well. One of the big ones that I really want to highlight for our listeners is medications. And the one that I really want to stress is testosterone. Testosterone therapy causes infertility. Now, a lot of people don't know that. And I see a lot of men who come into my clinic who have been trying for, you know, a year with their partner, young guys. And I ask, have they ever used testosterone? Are they on testosterone? They say yes. And they were started on it not knowing that it can kill your sperm. In fact, about 65% of men with normal sperm have no sperm in their ejaculate at 4 months and using testosterone. So it's very important that you understand if you have low testosterone and you want it to get treated, there's alternative ways that preserve your fertility that you can increase your testosterone. And I think that's a really important point. And the other point is it is reversible. You know, if you do stop the testosterone, most of the time we get sperm back in your ejaculate, majority 90% at 1 year and about 96% in 2 years, but there's no guarantee it's going to be the same as it was before. So that's just a really important point. You know, you have other things, chemotherapy, radiation, cancer things, health conditions. Obesity decreases your testosterone, can cause fertility issues, having a history of cancer, being treated for cancer. Diabetes is a big one. And these are all things that can impact you. Now, that's not lifestyle. Now we're going into lifestyle. I know there's a lot.
Before we go into lifestyle, I would love to discuss some of those points in a bit more detail. So testosterone replacement, what are the main reasons why somebody would take testosterone replacement?
Signs and symptoms of low testosterone are low energy, erectile dysfunction, low libido is pretty much one of the more likely symptoms of having low testosterone. Weight gain, just decreased motivation, you know, some depression, mood changes, loss of body hair, loss of facial hair, not head hair. At least in the States, it is becoming a very, very popular thing. Testosterone usage has significantly increased in the last 5 to 10 years. And it seems that a lot of people are not aware of the risks and benefits. And one of the major risks is this idea of having infertility. And it's kind of counterintuitive for a lot of people because we do know you need good testosterone levels to have good sperm. So if you do have low testosterone, we do want to get it up, but we don't want to give you exogenous testosterone. And to make it make sense, you know, what you're really doing is you have your brain, inside your brain, you have your pituitary, which signals hormones to your testicles to make sperm and to make testosterone. Now, if you are injecting or putting gel on or any way you're giving yourself testosterone, your brain then reads, I'm making enough testosterone. I don't need to signal anymore. So that signal from your brain, your pituitary, to your testicles stops, which means that while you have sufficient testosterone, you feel great. Your testicles are not the thing making testosterone. They're not making sperm at the same time. So that's why you can have infertility with testosterone usage.
Interesting. And am I right in thinking that people can be misled to take testosterone in the hope that it's going to amplify their gym workout?
Well, I mean, testosterone probably will improve your gym workout. You are getting, testosterone is an anabolic steroid, right? It builds muscle, it builds bone, it improves your red blood cell count, it increases your energy, your libido. But once again, testosterone is not for everyone. I prescribe testosterone all the time for people. It's a great medication if it's indicated, if it's something that, you know, you need. I'm not giving testosterone to everyone who walks in the door. We have guidelines. There's Endocrine Society guidelines here in the States. There's the urology guidelines that I follow. You know, you have to have the signs and symptoms of low testosterone, and you have to have levels that are indicative of low testosterone. So, you know, it's not just come in and you're getting testosterone because you ask for it. You know, it's a medicine at the end of the day to help treat people with low testosterone.
So if somebody has low testosterone but also trying to conceive, then how do you manage that? Because from what I understand, if you supplement with testosterone, that could result in reduced sperm.
Great question. So there's a few medications where we can naturally improve your testosterone levels and potentially improve your fertility as well. The most popular medication is something called Clomid. Now, a lot of women may be familiar with Clomid. It is a selective estrogen receptor modifier. So basically, it's an oral medicine that your brain gets tricked into increasing the hormones LH and FSH. LH in men makes is luteinizing hormone that makes tells your testicles to make testosterone, and FSH, follicle stimulating hormone, is the hormone your pituitary makes, and it tells your testicles to make sperm. So Clomid, what it does is it tells your pituitary to make more of those things. So you're naturally having your testicles kind of go in overdrive and make more testosterone from the testicle. And hopefully it can also make some more sperm. So that's one medicine, and it's low risk, taken daily. Some people feel better. It improves their testosterone as well. Some people feel really good on it. Some people feel the same, but you know, it is one of the options. There's other things like HCG. That's a hormone that is similar in structure to the luteinizing hormone. So that is an injection medicine. You usually do it about 3 times a week, and you inject it, and it tells your testicles to make more testosterone. And we've also shown that it can increase your fertility as well by doing that. There's other things, FSH, which is a little bit more expensive, the actual hormone that increases your sperm count or tells your testicles to make more sperm. There's other medications that I have used, including anastrozole, which prevents testosterone from being converted to estrogen in men. There's a lot of options out there is the bottom line, but all of these options you have to talk with your doctor about. So guys, that's why it's so important to go see your local urologist. And if you're worried about fertility, we have options, as you can see, but you can't figure out those options. We can't help you unless you go talk to us.
So you mentioned that chemotherapy also is something that can impact sperm. Is that always the case? And why is chemotherapy something that might affect sperm?
Yeah. So usually I see patients as soon as they're diagnosed with cancer, if they're of age and they're interested in family planning, I try to see them before they get their treatment, whether it's testicle cancer, lymphoma, whatever cancer it may be. And we try to bank sperm right away or preserve sperm. Why? Because in general, chemotherapy, depending on the radiation area, you know, if it's down in your pelvis, obviously a lot more likely to compromise your testicles. All of these things can at least temporarily compromise your fertility. Now, depending on the chemo, and we can sit here for days talking about which ones have higher, whatever, but I think the main point here is that chemotherapy can absolutely result in permanent sterility in patients. Some people, I've seen patients have, you know, sperm right after. I've seen patients have sperm 5 years after. One of my mentors said he's seen a guy who had no sperm for 15 years. All of a sudden, he developed sperm again after 15 years after chemotherapy. But the important point here is if you have a diagnosis of cancer, unfortunately, and you are interested in treatment, if you can, try to preserve your sperm before treatment. Now, that's not always possible for people. One, they're in a rush because it's a more extreme situation. Two, a lot of guys that I have seen, because they're sick, and you know, we'll get into this more with lifestyle and everything like that, but you know, your fertility is often a window into your overall health for a lot of people. Some people don't have sperm in their ejaculate during their time of cancer diagnosis because, you know, they're sick and that's just the way it is, right? And there's sometimes you can't do anything about that. But that's not the end of the story. That's not the end of the line for a lot of people. I see a lot of guys after completion of chemotherapy or radiation and they're ready to have a family. We do recommend though that you don't family plan. Even if you have sperm in your ejaculate, you don't do any family planning for 1 year after chemotherapy because we want you kind of to have a couple cycles of sperm. Sperm cycles about 3 months to kind of just not be impacted by the chemotherapy. So that's usually our recommendation for that.
Let's move into the lifestyle factors that influence sperm health. And also, I imagine this will touch upon fertility not being something that just people of family planning age should be interested in. But as you said, fertility is a biomarker for so many different health outcomes.
Absolutely. So I think the lifestyle part of fertility is so fascinating because I've had people walk into my door, have zero sperm in their ejaculate. I hear what they've been doing, how they've been living. I say, well, and it's not necessarily that they're unhealthy or anything. They're not doing anything unhealthy. They just don't know. And then I say, hold off, do stop doing this. They come back, their sperm's normal. And so that's not everyone, but I have seen that. And so this is where lifestyle is so fascinating in the fertility world, because some things you may be thinking you're helping yourself, you may be harming yourself. Very few things, but there are those things. So the first thing I think when we're talking about lifestyle, the most obvious, smoking causes infertility, kills your sperm. And that includes vaping. Now, the vaping data is very limited right now, but the early studies do suggest that even vaping can compromise your sperm, okay? Marijuana as well. The problem with marijuana is, you know, I can't quantify how much marijuana is going to, you know, decline your sperm, right? I'm not against marijuana and you know, it's not like I'm like a narc or anything like that. But, you know, if you're doing it once a month, once every two, I think you're probably okay. But if you really want to optimize everything, I would say completely cut off marijuana temporarily. Now, do I see guys who smoke weed or, you know, ingest weed and marijuana in some kind of way and their sperm counts are normal? Absolutely. But, you know, that's not everyone. And there's a lot of people who are on that border, and I can't really predict how some people's bodies react. Everyone's a little bit different. So that's one thing. Alcohol use. People ask about alcohol use. In general, I think a moderate amount of alcohol is okay. I'm not saying you should be drinking every night, because we do know that heavier alcohol consumption can cause fertility issues. But in general, you know, I think, you know, moderation, and this kind of goes to marijuana as well, right? Moderation is okay. I wouldn't say if you have a glass of wine and you're miserable if you don't have your glass of wine, I would say go have your glass of wine. It's not going to be the end of the world. And then the next one is kind of big, wet heat exposure. And what do I mean by that? I mean, hot tubs, saunas, steam rooms, jacuzzis, all of these things can actually kill your sperm, even theoretically going in at once. Why? Well, if you think about it, your testicles are outside of your body for a reason. They want to be, you know, 2 to 3 degrees cooler than the rest of your body. And that's why guys, when it's hot out, your balls drop, because they want to be a little bit cooler. And that's why when it's cold out, they come closer to your body to maintain that temperature. Now, when you're going in a hot tub, or you're going in a sauna, or you're going in a steam room, you're going not only above your body temperature, you're cooking those boys, you know, a lot higher, and that can temporarily kill your sperm. Now, when we're talking about lifestyle, I did mention before that sperm have a life cycle of about 3 months. So anything that you're doing in terms of lifestyle theoretically has a 3 month impact on your fertility. So if you go in a hot tub, you know, I'm not saying one time is going to put you over the edge. But once again, I don't know what your baseline semen parameters are. What if you're at a low count and that kind of puts you over the edge? Some people, it doesn't bother at all. But, you know, if you are trying to have a kid, I would say avoid hot tubs, steam rooms, saunas, jacuzzis. Easy thing to avoid. But I've seen a lot of guys who have come in great shape, take good care of themselves. They're big sauna guys because there are health benefits. And they come in, they have no sperm. I say, chill off on the sauna for, you know, the next 3 months. Come in, they got normal sperm, right? This is something that can actually happen. It's something that you need to be aware of.
Quick one on the heat exposure. What about on the freezing exposure? Because I know ice baths, you know, along with saunas, have become a huge trend, wellness trend in the last few years. Do ice baths, I guess that's not heating, but that extreme temperature, does that have an impact?
It's such a great question. And truthfully, I do not know. I have not been able to find a paper on this. And I've been asked this many times because it is a very big thing right now. People are doing ice baths. Now, obviously, we freeze sperm. Sperm doesn't die when it's frozen. So maybe people would be thinking, okay, maybe it's okay. But at the same time, I feel like extreme temperatures on either end probably don't want to mess with it. And so I tell people to just avoid it. I'm not saying that I know it causes infertility and it can kill your sperm, but I don't know. So what I don't know, I'd rather just have something controlled where I know that not getting exposed will not compromise your parameters. So if you want to do it, you can do it, but I just don't know. I don't know the impact. I truly do not.
Okay, good to know. Sorry, carry on.
No, no, of course. Another thing is important is that lube, sex lubricant, can actually kill your sperm as well. There are specific lubes that actually are better than others, and because that lube can create a less favorable environment for sperm. Here in the States, there's a lubricant that we recommend. The data shows that it does preserve a lot of the motility, which is the ability of the sperm to swim and get to the egg. It's called Preseed, P-R-E-S-E-E-D. Not sponsored by them, nothing like that. I think it's what we usually recommend as a lubricant, and that's kind of important. Next thing is ejaculation frequency. I think that when we talk with guys a lot, they're like, "Doc, you know, I'm waiting for, you know, the ovulation cycle. So I don't ejaculate. I hold it in for like 2 weeks and then we're having a whole lot of sex, or I'm having sex then." Now we do know that's actually not good for fertility, infrequent ejaculation. Actually, more frequent ejaculation is better. And we also do recommend, in fact, scheduled intercourse for achieving fertility with a partner, not just the ovulation cycle, now, which is very helpful. And we do recommend tracking your ovulation as a couple. But, you know, the data does show that more frequent ejaculation improves your fertility and improves your semen parameters. So you don't want to just be holding off, which is what I think some people intuitively think, that they're storing it and saving it for that time as I have sex. But when you think about it, if that sperm is sitting in your testicles for a longer period of time, they have more exposure to the environment, and, you know, they're a little bit older. So, you know, cleaning the pipes is actually a good thing when it comes to fertility. And a lot of my patients laugh and they like to hear that, and they tell their partner about that one for sure.
There's benefits and advantages.
Yeah, exactly. Some people roll their eyes, some people laugh, some people love it. And just on that point, the scheduled intercourse, I think, works for a lot of reasons. One, we know sperm lasts a couple days inside the uterus. So, you know, having sex every other day actually pretty much guarantees that there's always sperm in your uterus ready for the egg to drop when you are ovulating. So that's a benefit as well. I also find it, you know, a lot of guys come to me with stress and with their couple, like, sex isn't fun anymore. I'm not enjoying sex, because when you're having sex to have a baby, it's a job. It's not fun. It just becomes less sexy. It takes the sexy out of sex. So having this scheduled intercourse can somewhat, for a lot of people, make it fun. Like, okay, we're going to do it this day. Like, we're going to do, and you don't have to have sex like 100 times that day either. You know, one time is fine, you know, because you hear couples all the time, "Oh, we're in the fertility window. We're having sex 5 times a day for 3 days. I'm exhausted. This isn't fun." Well, just have sex every other day. You know, you can make it fun. You have it on a schedule. You know, do something that you and your partner really enjoy. So I think that's another aspect of this, because a lot of guys can get erectile dysfunction during this process, and they come to me with erectile dysfunction because of the stress involved with this process, or they're just having too much sex in such a short window that they just can't perform. And that's a common thing. So, you know, I think this is another way to improve that. And then finally, the last thing I wanted to talk about really here is EDCs, which is a lot of what Dr. Swan had talked about in her book, and a lot of what people are talking about in terms of the declining sperm parameters. And EDCs is endocrine disrupting chemicals. And they can disrupt your testicular function and hormones like testosterone or estrogen in your body. And they can potentially, therefore, compromise your sperm and fertility. And some of the names that you have maybe heard of in of these chemicals are like bisphenol A and phthalates. And they're found in a lot of things like plastics, flame retardants, electronics, food packaging, pesticides, to personal care and some cosmetics. And, you know, I think there is some data suggesting that increased exposure to these things can potentially compromise your hormones, can compromise your fertility. And once again, I am not a doomsday guy, but I think that these things, there is some validity to them, right? And that you need to be aware of. And how can you reduce exposure to these chemicals? Well, I think, you know, reading ingredients on things before you purchase them is important. Like bathroom cleaners, kitchen cleaners, things like that, and understanding what you're spraying on the table and what you're getting exposed to. Choosing personal care products that are phthalate-free and paraben-free, ditching air fresheners and scented products, which can often have these things. not microwaving food in plastics, using glass and things like that can actually help. Making filtering drinking water, tossing out plastic food storage containers, nonstick cookware. These are just some easy ways to reduce your exposure. And I don't know what the exposure level is, right? I don't know what the level for, you know, will compromise these things. I don't know how many people are impacted by it, but is it possible? And if you want to optimize everything about your health, yes, this is a way in which you can do so.
I mean, I think the endocrine disrupting chemicals is, in my mind, quite a kind of under-discussed topic, given the fact that culturally we are really loud when it comes to talking about diet and exercise, and yet our health is being, from the research, pretty severely impacted by these chemicals that kind of linger in our environment that we could all do a lot more in protecting ourselves from. One conversation that I know people are aware of, and yet I think we are all afraid to do and think about because we're so deeply attached to these things, which is our mobile phones or our cell phones in our pockets and even by our ears. What are your thoughts on phone radiation and sperm health?
Great question. So I did my training here at University of Miami. I have a podcast, and one of my colleagues had actually put out that paper. There was a recent paper showing that there is some data suggesting that maybe phones can cause some fertility issues. Now, it's a very small study. There's, you know, limited data on it, but there is some limited data saying it's possible. So what do you do with this information? I'm not screaming from the, you know, the top of the mountains, ditch your phones, ditch, you know, stop using your phone, because you're not going to, first off, so it's not reasonable. But I think that if you're a guy, if you're really worried about this, I would just not have your phone in your front pocket. Maybe just have it in your back pocket, keep it a little further away from your testicles. But I think that like maybe a small fix like that, because I don't really know how far the distance and how far that, you know, reach is of the phone, but maybe keeping it further away from your genitals is not a bad idea. But once again, there is some data suggesting this. I'm not 100% sure that, you know, this is happening for everyone, but there is some smaller studies that have been done on the topic.
As you know, I'm a huge advocate for natural ways to optimize health. Nature is full of medicine if we care to find it. So this led me recently to discover Karma Ayurveda, a skincare and hair care brand that now holds a special place in my heart. Originating from India, it's been around for 20 incredible years, crafting holistic, natural products rooted in Ayurvedic wisdom. One of my personal favorites is their Kumkumadi range, enriched with saffron. Not only does it smell divine, but it also works wonders on the skin, giving you that real, I think I've just slept for 10 hours glow, which, let's be honest, we all want. In exciting news, Karma Ayurveda has just arrived in the UK, opening a stunning store in Notting Hill. Here you can explore their range of Ayurvedic treatments and even meet with an Ayurvedic doctor for personalized advice. I recently went this morning to meet a doctor and it was incredible. She checked my pulse and after a few minutes, she was able to tell me everything that I have been struggling with, even though I didn't mention a thing to her. She was able to tell through checking my pulse how my digestion was, and she gave me some incredible advice to help soothe that. And she was also able to tell that my skin was dry. Honestly, it was an incredible experience that I highly recommend if you're in the London area. But if you're not, then you can still tap into the secrets of Ayurveda and tap into that harmony that you can find using Karma Ayurveda's products. Do visit their website at karmaayurveda.com to discover more.
I was quite shocked when I started to learn that men have a biological clock, because I just think that we've all been conditioned to think that men can have children at any age. But I've been led to believe that that's actually not the case. What are your thoughts on the male biological clock?
It's a good question, because I think that we've seen on the media some things, and I think especially we've seen one thing that we know, right? It's factual that, you know, biological females are born with their set of eggs, and those are the amount of eggs that they have for their entire life. So, you know, there's a point where their fertility ends. and that's menopause, right? And then you can't have achieve a pregnancy through those means anymore. Men, we do create sperm for our whole lives. We absolutely do create sperm for, if you make sperm in the beginning, you probably are making it sperm until the day you die, in general, of course. And we've really seen recent examples of this in the media, right? Al Pacino, Robert De Niro, they recently had kids in their 80s. So, you know, is it impossible to have kids when you're older? No, absolutely not. I live in Miami. There's a lot of old people having kids with a lot of young people. I promise you that. But there is a difference that we're now understanding that as men get older, you know, starting in their mid-40s and into their 50s, their fertility does decline and the risk of issues with their offspring does increase. You know, the decline in fertility, and it kind of makes sense, right? As you get older, your testicles just don't function as well as they used to. That's why as you get older, there's a higher risk of, you know, low testosterone and things like that. It kind of all correlates if you really think about it, because that's what your testicles function. And it can make conceiving at an older age harder. And there is data showing that an increased age in men puts, you know, the potential child at increased risk for things like premature birth, low birth weight, birth defects, autism. Now, while it's an increased risk, it's really important to know that this is not like a very high increased risk. I can't really quantify it. We haven't really quantified it. But if it's 0.000001% chance and it's 0.000002% chance now, like it's a very small but increased amount. So older age really should not deter people from having their kids is the bottom line. But it's really important to understand that it may be more difficult than if you were younger or when you were younger. And there's other implications there. And those are the same risks that we have found with older female pregnancies as well.
I think it's quite an important point though, because you're right, the media does distort what we think is possible. And this idea that sperm quality does decrease in the same kind of correlation with age is something just to be mindful of, and something that, would you say, is kind of surprisingly unknown?
Yeah, I think it's what's interesting is a lot of guys don't think about having kids, but then when they do, they assume that everything's the same. And I think that that's kind of the difference, right? You know, I've seen guys who come in and they are in their 60s, they're in their second marriage, and which happens a lot, right? And they're saying, hey, you know, I had kids with my first partner. I would really like to have another kid with my new partner. We're just struggling now. And I didn't have any problems before. And this happens, right? Because like exactly like you said, you know, things aren't the same when you were 20 as when you were 40. And things aren't the same when you were 40 and from now when you're 60. Mm. For some people it is, but not for everyone. And there's a lot of lifestyle factors. There's exposures. There's just biology there. There's a lot of different things that can cause that. So yeah, for sure. It's a great point.
How does sperm change? I mean, I guess what I'm getting at is, do sperm kind of lose their ability to swim? Kind of like, how do they become? Because as you said, as sperm age, the probability potentially slightly increases for things like autism or lots of different biological disorders. Right. Why is that? What is happening to the sperm?
In general, when I look at sperm, and there's three things that I usually look at, and there's a fourth that I'll mention. When I'm looking at the first thing, when I'm looking at anyone's sperm, is volume. I want to see if something's coming out, right? Because if nothing's coming out, you probably can't have a kid naturally. So that's number one. Two, I want to look at your concentration, how many sperm you have per milliliter in your ejaculate. And that's usually in the millions. Anything less than 15 million is abnormal. Is abnormal meaning low. Now, in general, older men, as they get older, they can have decreases in that concentration, which is, so they're just making less, which is one of those things that can happen in, as they get older. Now, that once again, that's not everyone, but could be some older men. Then you have something called motility. Can they swim? Can they get where they need to go? And that's very important, because you can have a billion sperm, but if you have a billion sperm and they can't move, they're never going to get to the egg. So it's actually a very important thing. And less than 40% motility is considered low. And this is another thing that as time and you get older, aging can cause motility issues, as can a lot of the lifestyle factors that we had discussed before. Those are the main three that are important and that can be compromised, you know, during age and things like that in lifestyle. There's another thing called the morphology, which is the shape of your sperm. I do see a lot of patients who come in with abnormal morphology where less than 4% sperm is considered abnormal. This is the head, the tail, and how it looks. And the good news is I don't really care about morphology for the most part, nor should really most people. There's a very small, specific group of things that in morphology that can be concerning. But in general, the shape of sperm has no impact on your fertility. It has no impact on the outcomes in terms of birth defects or anything like that. There's no data to suggest this. So a lot of people come in freaking out because they see that their morphology is abnormal. And I say, hey, everything else is normal. You can go ahead and have a kid. There's nothing to worry about. But, you know, these are also things that you can kind of see with aging as well.
What can people do to proactively protect and support sperm health? And why should people even care about this, especially if they're not planning for a family in the short term?
No, it's an important question. And the theme here today is going to be that, you know, obviously, we talked a little bit about sexual health, but you know, it's inherently tied with fertility. Is, you know, sexual health, fertility health, fertile health, this is health. So what you're talking about here is any issues you're having with fertility can potentially be a sign or symptom of other health issues, right? We've tapped on the idea that diabetes, obesity, these things can cause fertility issues, lack of exercise, you know, not taking care of yourself, smoking, excessive marijuana use, excessive alcohol use. These are all things that can compromise your fertility. If you are serious about your fertility and you're serious about, you know, your future overall health, I think, you know, you also want to be living the best life possible. And that includes things like, you know, exercising, eating correctly, stopping smoking, vaping, you know, those kinds of things, avoiding exposures to EDCs, as we discussed. So these are all ways in which you can prepare yourself and live a good, healthy life now, so that when the time does come and you want to have kids, it's, you know, you're able to do so. Fertility isn't overnight, right? We've said that sperm can take 3 months. The cycle is 3 months. So even if you're not having kids now and, you know, maybe you want to just have the opportunity and you don't want to be waiting when the time comes for yourself to have that family planning be delayed. So I think, you know, living your best, healthiest life is the best thing so that your sperm can live its best, healthiest life.
What I think is interesting in the data that I've looked at is exercising is on a scale, because from what I understand, and you'll know more, actually over-exercising can then become harmful to your sperm health.
Yeah, it is an extreme, but it is very possible. You see it in a lot of people like marathon runners. You know, if we talk about, we've talked about fertility as a gauge for health, and I'm not saying these people are not unhealthy, but you know, there's a point where you're overexuding yourself. And you know, marathon runners, they're working on, they're burning all their calories. They're pretty skinny people, men and women. And there's a point where you're just not making good sperm anymore. It can compromise your testosterone levels. It can compromise your fertility. And the same thing with, like, we can see it in bikers, long distance bikers. There's some data suggesting that as well. When you're doing some extremely strenuous things to your body is not thinking, let's make sperm. It's thinking, let's get our shit together and keep it together, if that makes sense. So, you know, in general, I would say a very small percentage of people, I'm talking about like these extreme athletes. I'm not talking about like NBA players, basketball players, NFL, like not even that. Like I'm talking about marathon runners, Ironman runners, all of, like, you know, bikers, long distance bikers, you know, they can potentially have their sperm compromised, but it's not the case for everyone. So I wouldn't worry about the normal person overexerting themselves for the most part to compromise their fertility.
What are your thoughts on freezing sperm? Because, I mean, I guess it's a lot less taxing experience than egg freezing is for women. But I know sperm freezing companies are setting up more than ever because, you know, they're seeing this opportunity in the market, given that awareness around sperm health is increasing. Do you encourage people to freeze their sperm, or do you think this is fear-mongering and not necessary?
No, I think it's a great question, because I am someone who has a lot of patients bank their sperm, and I do recommend it for a lot of people. Now, is it for everyone? Maybe, maybe not. Now, I think it is something inherently that is vastly underused. However, I think that, you know, we've already talked about people with cancer or who have been newly diagnosed with cancer or maybe some other health issues that they require some serious treatments. I think that those people should absolutely be thinking about banking and sperm banking. Another time that I have recommended it is I do a lot of vasectomies on patients, which, you know, the goal is sterility. And sometimes these patients say, hey, just as a backup, maybe I should do something. And I'll say, hey, listen, if you want to bank some sperm, go ahead, bank some sperm. And I have had vasectomy patients bank sperm. But in general, you know, is it a bad thing to do? No, I don't. I think, you know, the risk is very low. The only risk really is financial. And it's not that expensive, but obviously you have to do it within your means and your budget. But, you know, having something set away just in case is never a bad thing. I think it's always worth talking about it with your local healthcare provider and see if it's something that is of interest to you. They can point you in the right direction if it is something you do want to do. It's the same thing with people on testosterone, right? Some people say, hey, I want to go on testosterone. I have a couple patients now, you know, they want to go on testosterone because they feel like crap. And they don't really want to wait until fertility. And I'm not saying you should do this, but some people want to bank sperm. The important thing you have to understand when you're banking sperm is this: that sperm, you know, cannot be used for anything other than IVF. So in vitro fertilization, right? So A, that's expensive, right? IVF in the States, most states is not covered by insurance right now. We are getting better at that, where more companies and more insurance companies and states are supporting reproductive health for insurance. That's one thing. Two, you're putting a lot of stress on your partner because the female partner is the one who's really going to be bearing the physical, mental, emotional brunt of undergoing IVF. And guys, it is not easy. IVF is not fun for your partner. That is an understatement of the year, probably, but it's something also to consider, right? But listen, once again, sperm banking and freezing your sperm is a great option, especially if, you know, you need to. And I do encourage people, I think at least, you know, the access to these online companies can at least increase your understanding of your fertility, right? You don't have to go to a doctor right away if you're worried about your fertility. If you're concerned, you can go online, you can go to one of these sites and just check your sperm count, right? And that's something that I do see a lot of guys coming in to see me because they were starting to think about family planning. And before they did so, they went online and they bought a fertility kit. And I do encourage that as well, because guess what? Knowledge is power. And if you're trying to learn about your health, you're trying to learn about your fertility and during family planning, I think it's a great way to do so.
What are the most common health concerns? There's a kind of separate overall health question regarding men's health, because for so long, men have been so hesitant to seek out medical help or even learn about basic male health problems, in inverted commas, a huge general point. But what would you say is a call to action for men to be more aware of and questions you receive time again that you wish more men knew about?
I'm going to stress this again. Sexual health and fertility health is health, right? So I cannot tell you how many times as a urologist and men's health doctor that I have seen guys who I am the first doctor that they have seen in probably 30 years, 20 years. And it's one of those jokes that I say all the time. It's like, do you have diabetes? Do you have heart disease? And they're like, doc, I'm perfectly healthy. And I go, when was the last time you went to the doctor? They're like, 35 years ago. It's like, so you can't get diagnosed with something unless you go to the doctor. So that's the first thing. And, you know, I have diagnosed a lot of men with heart disease, diabetes, problems like this, because they're coming to me for other issues. Mm. Now, what's important to understand is that when you take care of yourself, your sexual health is taken care of, your fertility is taken care of. And I think that two things that guys don't really want to talk about is their sexual health, their erections and stuff like that. They're very embarrassed to talk about these things, and also their fertility. And these are two of the main things that I treat. And we have to do a better job of, you know, destigmatizing these conversations. But I think, you know, the things of testosterone, I think one of the biggest things I still see is this idea that, you know, I see a lot of guys not knowing that testosterone causes fertility problems. And that's one of the things I do want to, you know, I've been on my soapbox for a bit here and trying to really put out to the world. I want guys to know that, you know, if you want to be a good partner, you need to get evaluated. I think this is the biggest thing. I think one thing that guys really need to understand, there's this huge unfair stigma on women when it comes to fertility. We've gone through the data, we've gone through the statistics today, and we understand it takes two to tango. 50% of the time, there is a male factor involved. So if you want to be a good partner, and if you want to be, you know, that dad that you want to be, you know, I think you really need to go talk to a doctor about your health, go talk to your doctor about your fertility status, because you want to be supportive. You want to be there for your partner. And going through that process alone can be terrifying. And I think a lot of things for guys, one of the things I like to say is your best ability is availability. Being there for your partner during this process and showing support by doing your part. And I think that that's one of the most important things as men we can do is check our health and be there for our partners who are also going through that process. And I think you guys have to go through hand in hand together and do this.
Thank you so much, Dr. Dubin, for your time today. This has been so helpful. You're such a great educator. We are all so grateful for the work you do and the awareness that you raise. And thank you so much for sharing your insights with us.
This has been so wonderful. I really appreciate you having me on. This was really great.
Thank you so much for listening. And if you enjoyed today, please hit subscribe and leave a comment because this helps the podcast so much. I'd be endlessly grateful if you wouldn't mind doing so. My mental health book, Happy Not Perfect, is available to order now. The book teaches you how to be a flexible thinker, a skill that helps you navigate any challenge that might come your way, helps you manage emotions, and helps you thrive to be the bendiest version of yourself. Until next time, I love hearing from you, so do shoot me a message on Instagram, send me a DM with any of your thoughts. Stay safe and well.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.